We're holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, the sixth line. We learned yesterday a statement of Reish Lakish. Now, like this, we know, of course, in Shechita, as we've been talking about all along, you have to cut through the windpipe and the esophagus, or at least the majority of them, in the case of an animal. Now, Reish Lakish had said that once you shechted through the windpipe, if now a hole develops in the lung, then it's not a problem. We consider as though that lung was, the expression was, as though the lung is in a basket, because now it's not attached. So now the windpipe, which is where it gets its air from, has been cut. And we discussed, would that apply also to the intestines and the esophagus and so on and so forth. So now we're going to take that in a different direction. We see from what Reish Lakish is saying, this idea that once you shechted the windpipe, then the lung can be considered as though it was outside the body, and therefore the treifa state don't matter anymore. We can learn from it a whole different thing. You would be allowed to invite a yid to enjoy a meal of bnei me'ayim, of internal organs with you. So Rashi points out, for example, that means that when we say bnei me'ayin, that includes various internal organs, but among them would be the lungs, like we were just talking about. So the folks can talk about that maybe conceivably could include other internal organs as well. Whatever the case, you would be allowed to invite a yid to eat a meal of those with you. The aim is but you would not be allowed to invite a goy to join you in such a meal. They would be also, in effect, we're saying they would be also to eat the lungs. They would be also to eat the lungs for the reasons that we're going to explain. And again, according to somebody showing him, we would say maybe the same thing is true of the other internal organs as well. Why? My timer. Yisrael, the Shechita Talia Milsa. Because by Yisrael, by Yid, what makes meat mutter to be eaten, so that's not Eva Menachai anymore, when the animal is shechted? Well, there is a perfectly good shechita issued in the hoof, therefore all those internal organs become mutter. In other words, when Reish Lakish had said before that once the windpipe is shechted, the lungs are considered as though they're missing from the animal, but ultimately they're still in there. So in other words, they become no longer, so in other words, in you could almost say that at that point they're no longer Eiv Menachai. You can't eat them yet because you haven't had a proper shechita. And then when you finish the shechita, then they're no longer Eiv, then as it is, they weren't Eiv Menachai anymore, and now that the shechita was completed, then they're mutter to eat, and therefore there's no problem. So therefore, a yid would be able to eat that meat. But when it comes to goyim, the mechira sadi lohu, they don't require shechita in order to be able to eat animals. They can do mechira, which we've talked about before. Mechira means ripping from the nostrils until the vital organs, or it means stabbing, or it means whatever the exact definition of mechira is. It doesn't require shechita or misa talya milsa. For them, the key factor whether you can eat meat. After all, goyim are also to eat even a high as well. It's one of their seven mitzvahs. So when it comes to them, what you need mechira, you need some kind of killing of a mis Italian milsa, and it really depends on whether the animal is dead. Well then, what happens is now, if you shech the windpipe first, as is the typical thing, then it means, as Reish Lakish had said, that the lung is now separated from the body, therefore, and didn't become, it still remains Eiv Menachai for them. So with a yid, we could say it still remains Eiv Menachai, but fine, once the shechita is completed, then it's no longer Eiv Menachai. For a goy, though, you have a problem, because it's considered once you shechted the windpipe, as though it's detached from the body, now, even you shechted, when you finish the shechita and cut both simonim, it still remains Eiv Menachai, because not shechita that makes meat mutter for them, it's the death of the animal, and at this point, the lung is already considered previously separated from the animal. So in other words, the same way, for example, as if you were to tear off a leg from the animal, for example, and then shecht it, that leg doesn't become mutter because of the shechita of the animal. It's detached from it. The same way over here, then how could you say that the lungs, and again, possibly maybe other internal organs as well, should be mutter for them. Therefore, says Rachab Yaakov, they wouldn't, and they would actually be also for them to lose. So therefore, you'd shecht this animal, you can't invite a goy to join you in eating a meal of the lungs again. However, Amar Rav Papa, Habi Yisiv Nekamed Rav Acha Bayakov, but Rav Papa says, I was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Acha Bayakov, the same one who just said the statement, and I was thinking to tell him, how could that mean? Since when do we have something which is mutter for a yid and also to a goy? We have more mitzvahs than they do. So you can't say that so what do you mean? That there should be some part of the animal that we're allowed to eat and they're not allowed. But says the prophet, but I didn't say that to him, because I thought to myself, well, time of karma, look, after all, you know, he does have a logical point behind what he's saying. So in other words, this idea of mi'ikamidi, this idea that we should always be machmir more on a yid than on a goy, not necessarily do we say that when there's a logical reason to say otherwise. So in fact, Tosfos gets into some discussion over here about that point. The Gemara, for example, mentions in Sanhedrin when it mentions that point. How do you have something which is mutter for a yid but also for a goy? So the Gemara tries to bring some counterexample, one of them being a yifas toyar. A yid is allowed to take a yifas toyar even if he is already a married woman and go through the whole process in parshas kiseitze and eventually marry her, whereas a goy would not be allowed to do that. And the Gemara answer is because the Goyim don't have, when they conquer land, it's not considered fully valid off the halacha as opposed to what Jews do, then it does have a certain validity. So you could argue over here, then the same thing. Goyim are not subject to the, are not relevant to the rules of Shita as opposed to Jews are. And Tosfos goes through a number of other examples. We know Akum should also have Torah Chayamisa, Goyim is not allowed to learn Torah, whereas we're supposed to. So another example is a goy is chayev for performing abortion, whereas a yid is not. So Tosfos goes through a variety of different examples where seemingly we have things where in fact there's something that is mutter for a yid, or for, let's say, with abortion, maybe not mutter, but at least not punishable, whereas for a goy it is, So in fact, there are Rishonim who say that maybe, in fact, there might be different sugyas on the subject, some of which disagree with each other. It's called the Shmuas Talukas, or Sugyas Talukas. And in fact, there might be other Gemaras that imply that there could be such a thing, that there could be things that are also for Goy and Mutter for Yid. Tosfos goes through a long discussion about it, that sometimes you have, for example, let's say as far as Shabbos, you can't say that it's mutter for a yid. It's not a matter of mutter, it's a matter of mitzvah. So that rule wouldn't apply. And you have a number of other different points that Tosfos makes in this connection, and a lot of lumders from other Rishonim and Achronim about the ins and outs of that. In any case, so Rav Papa says to himself, so I didn't ask, how could that be? Because the fact is, we said, given Rav Acha bar Yaakov's distinction between a yid who's allowed to eat meat after shechita and a goy who has to wait till the animal's dead, then there is a logical point that he's saying. The Gemara says, Tanya is like Rav Acha bar Yaakov. However, we learn a Braisa, not like Rav Acha bar Yaakov, because the Braisa says, I wrote to Lechel, with the Hem Akodim Shetete Nafra, if a person wants to eat meat from an animal before its life force has completely left it, which, as the Gemara is going to say in a few lines, is good for one's health. What do you do? You have an issue of Eivim and Achai. So what do you do? Cut off a kazayas of meat from the area of the shechita. Why would you do? You could, in principle, do from other parts as well. But Rashi points out, as a practical matter, you don't need to skin it first. There is skin on the neck, of course, but it's loosely enough attached, or cut open, or maybe, I don't know if it's loosely enough attached, but the point is you've cut open the neck over there, and therefore you have exposed muscles that you can right away get to without having to go through the skin. So you cut out a kazayas over there. You salt it very well, because Tosfos points out, you do have to salt it very well, even if you're going to roast it. Even if you're going to roast it, normally roasting, you don't need to salt the meat, or at least not very much. But here, because it absorbed a lot of blood during the shechita, then therefore you need to salt it. So you need to salt it extra. And you have to rinse it off very well, as you usually do after the salting. Tosfos points out, we're going to learn later in the Masechta, you also need to wash it thoroughly before you salt it. But Tosfos says there can be reasons why the Gemara didn't mention it over here. First of all, because, let's say, for example, you have a case mentioned later in the Masechta. For example, you buy meat from the butcher already washed. I mean, in this case, you're not really buying it from the butcher. You distracted it yourself. But okay, nevertheless, we still don't always have to mention that pre-washing. And then Tosfos gives a couple of other answers as well, why it would be fine, why it might be fine, even if you don't wash it first. Anyway, now you have to wait until the animal's life force is completely left it, until it's not twitching and quivering and then convulsing anymore. And then you can eat. And the Braisa says, whether a goy would be allowed to eat such meat. So you see, in other words, so here, Rav Acha bar Yaakov had said that when you have a piece that's considered removed from the animal before it died, then a yid would be allowed to eat it, a goy would not. As we're saying, in the case of the lung, that Rish Lakish had said that once you shech the windpipe, the lung is considered removed from the body. And nevertheless, we're saying a yid would be allowed to eat it, because eventually the shechita is completed properly, and now that lung is no longer Eiv Menachai. As opposed to Rav Acha bar Yaakov had said that by a goy it's not so, because by him the key factor is whether it's died, and at the time the lung was in effect removed from the body by the cutting of the windpipe, and then it remains as if it had still remained cut from the body afterwards, and it doesn't become mutter when the animal dies. Which your papa had said, wait a minute, anyway, how do you have something that's mutter to a yid and also to a goy? But in any case, the Braisa is clearly not saying that. The Braisa is clearly saying that you can take a piece out of the neck, and all you have to do is fine. You have to wait until the animal stops convulsing in order to be able to eat it. But meanwhile, you did take it off the animal while it was still moving around after the shritta, and was saying that whether a yid or a goy are mutter to eat that meat. So you see that we don't have the Acha bar Yaakov's distinction about that it should be mutter for a year than also for a good. And in fact, Gemara says, Messiah, that Rabbi Eliba Oven, in fact, this supports what Rabbi Eliba Oven says, this point that the Braisa says, you want to eat meat from an animal before takes a natural, why would you want to do that? The Amr Rabbi Eliba Oven, Amr Rabbi Yitzchak bar Ashiyan, Haroitza Sheyavri, if a person wants to become healthier, he wants to eat the kind of meat that will make him as healthy as possible. He does exactly that. He cuts out a kazayas of meat from the base of shchita of the animal. And again, it doesn't necessarily have to be from the base of shchita, but as a practical matter, right after the shchita, that's the easiest to get to. You salt it thoroughly to remove the blood. You wash it thoroughly to remove the salt that is now impregnated with blood. Umam to mancha takes a natra. Wait until the animal's life force has left it. And then, says Rabbi Yisrael, and a goy or a yid would equally well be allowed to eat that meat. So that's exactly what the Braisa said, and not like Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov said. So on the face of it, that would seem to be the conclusion then, because we have a Braisa against Rabbi Loira, against Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov, and he can't argue with a Braisa, and we have Rabbi Eliba Oven against him. In fact, the Rif, in fact, brings like that opinion, that in fact, whether a goy or a yid would be allowed to eat it. On the other hand, the Rambam writes that a goy, in fact, would not be allowed to eat from meat that was taken off an animal before Tetzei Nafsha. For him, it would be considered Eiv Menachai. And there's an enormous amount of discussion among Noisa Kalim of the Rambam and among other Rishonim and Achronim. How exactly does the Rambam understand it in light of our Gemara? So the Kesef Mishnah brings a possible answer, and the Lacham Mishnah also discusses it, and there's quite a bit of discussion how exactly the Rambam arrives at that. One point is, it's a matter that we've said before about Sugyas Halukas. They have different Sugyas that sometimes disagree with one another about the premises of Halacha. Here the Gemara is taking it as one point is. We can say that the reasoning behind the Braisa, even though, as your Papa the setup. Achava Yaakov has a very logical reason behind his distinction, the difference between a yid requiring a shchita and a goy requiring the death of the animal. Nevertheless, the Braisa is not making that distinction, indicating that maybe the Braisa accepts that principle that, as the Gemara had said before, that you don't have something that a Papa had said, thought to himself, that you never find something which is mutter for a yid and also for a goy. Nevertheless, though, there are other sugyas, some of which Tosfos brings over here, that seem to not have a problem with that, so therefore not necessarily is this Bryce of the last word on the subject. So there is quite a bit of discussion back and forth about that point. In the end, the Tur ends up passing, like the Rif, and also the Rosh, that it would in fact be mutter for a goy regardless, these lungs and other such things, whereas so the Rambam is kind of a dasi offer in it, but there is a good deal of discussion about that. An interesting thing that comes up a bit, this famous explanation about the argument between Yosef and his brothers. You know that one of the things that Yosef went and reported to Yaakov is that his brothers are eating Avim and Achav. So what is that? So how does Gerachim, the Mishnah Melech, brings an explanation based on this whole thing? They were eating exactly that. They were eating some meat that was taken off the animal before takes in Africa, which, according to the Rambam's Shitta, then we're saying, according to Rabbi Achav Yaakov, whom the Rambam is basically passing in light, we would say that sort of thing would be mutter for a yid, but also for Bnei Noach. So the question boiled down to, what are Yosef and his brothers considered at this point? I mean, on the one hand, the Torah hasn't been given yet, so they're Bnei Noach. On the other hand, the fact is that Bnei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, they're already, Hashem has a special covenant with them and so forth, and maybe therefore, to that extent, they should be considered like Jews, and the law of requiring Shitta should apply to them. So the Parshas Terachim explains famously that was the argument between them. Yosef held their like Bnei Noach, so such a thing as Osir, and for them it would be Avraham Achai, whereas the brothers held that they're already considered like Jews, and therefore it would be perfectly mutter for them to cut off a piece before the animal stopped moving around, as long as then, as the Gemara says over here, they wait until after it stops moving and then they eat it. The Mishnah says, if a person shechts a domestic animal or a wild animal or a bird and no blood comes out of it, so ksherim, the animals are kosher. The Gemara is going to point out that we're actually talking about cholim over here. Like kodshim, you can't really say if no blood came out you could eat it, because as the Gemara is going to point out, for one thing, you need the blood of them to sprinkle on them as they act. But we're talking about cholim, and in fact that's a reason for the Mishnah. In fact, the Rashba points out this is a reason for the Mishnah to mention the word chaya. If it just said behem of oif, or if it just said ashoichet without specifying anything, you can think that it's referring to kodshim. Like there are kodshim that are behemoth, of course. There are kodshim that are two types of birds, but there are no kodshim ever of them as they are that are chayas, that are wild animals, such as deer or gazelle or buffalo or what have you. So therefore, by putting in the word chaya, it's clear that we're talking about cholin over here. So the Rashba points out another point as well. After all, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta, by Chaya and Oif, you have to do Kisi Adam. So you would think that maybe if no blood came out, then you have a problem. Now you can't accomplish that mitzvah of Kisi Adam. Nevertheless, the Mishnah is telling us that's not a problem. Yet another point, actually, as well. Yet another point as well. The Chassam Sofer and the number of Achronim, the Chassam Sofer and the Torah Chaim and Rosh Yosef point out later in the Perek, we're going to talk about the concept of mesukenes. You have an animal that's dangerously ill, and you shecht it at the last moment before it dies of natural causes, because if it died, it would be nevela, and then you can't eat it. So you want to shecht it at the last moment. You are allowed to do that, but then you have to make sure that it actually was alive, that it didn't die during the shchita itself. So then you have to have, you have to see that it moves convulsively in certain ways, as we're going to learn later on in the parak. So here, where no blood came out, you might think that that's also a simon that maybe it was dead already, and therefore the Mishnah is telling us that's not a problem. So they have a number of different points of the chiddush that the Mishnah is saying that if no blood comes out, that they're pshayim. And the Mishnah continues, v'nei cholim b'yadayim mesu'avos. You would also be able to eat this meat of this animal with hands that are tamar. Lidrabanan, a person's hands are generally considered sheni of a tumah. We're going to be discussing now in Gemara the details of what degree of tumah they are. But we're going to learn later on in the Sefta about the whole concept of netilas yadayim from bread is all based on this idea that lidrabanan, a person's hands are tumah, and therefore you have to wash. About later on, much later on the Sefta, we're going to talk about that whole concept, why we need to do it for any bread, even if we're eating, even if it's colon, etc. In any case, the point is, now the Mishnah is saying that this meat did not become mukshu l'kabel tumah because no blood came out. Therefore, you would be able to eat it with hands that are chopped. In fact, by the way, the Roth points out, of course the Mishnah is talking about Cholin, because there's no issue to eat Cholin b'tumah. We're going to start talking in the Mishnah about Cholin, and in the Gemara, I mean, about Cholin shenasu altaras afodish and altaras atrumah. We're going to talk about that the next couple of dafim, but nevertheless, there's no issue to eat Cholin b'tumah. So the very fact that the Mishnah is saying that you could eat them with the hands that are tumah implies clearly that we're talking about Cholin. The Gemara is going to have to bring several proofs to the Mishnah, but why isn't it bring this one? And he says, because the point is not so much that you're allowed to. Of course you're allowed to, but the point is that But if the meat, if you were to say that your hands are matame the meat, the result is when you eat the meat itself, you would become tame by exeter de rabbanan, and then you wouldn't be able to eat truma or kodshim. So therefore, that's the point of the Mishnah saying that you're allowed to eat it with hands that are tame. The point being, in other words, you won't be matame the meat because it wasn't moshul or kabel truma, because no blood came out. Therefore, you're allowed to. Therefore, when you eat it with tame hands, not so much you're allowed to. Of course, you're allowed to. Says but the point is that if you do, you don't become tamei from eating the meat, and therefore afterwards you could eat truma or kodesh and gezuntahet. On the other hand, Rashi does say in a couple of dafim that maybe there is a certain degree of issue in it. You're not allowed to make yourself tamei unnecessarily. So that would be, in other words, the point is that the point would be that now the Mishnah is saying, don't worry about that. This meat is not mukshul akabal tumah because no blood came out. Therefore, you can eat it. Therefore, you can eat it with tumah hands. The fish are mukshul akabal, because they didn't become mukshul akabal tumah by the blood. You have seven liquids that if they touch food, then they make mukshul akabal tumah. Blood is one of them. Here, there's no blood. Therefore, they're not mukshul akabal tumah. Tosfos brings up a point, actually. First of all, Tosfos brings up a couple of points over here. First of all, the Gemara is going to learn from a pasuk that when blood is not spilled on the ground, it's not matzah. When blood is not the type that is spilled on the ground, it's not matzah the kabel tumah. Therefore, the Gemara is going to explain that blood of kodshim is not matzah meat, the meat of the animal it came from to be makabel tumah. Well, in that case, chaya and oish, since you need to do kisi adam, then that should also be considered that not, it's not in the category of ala oris tishpachenu kamoyim. You just pour it out on the ground like water, and that's that. The fact is, you have to do kisi adam. Nevertheless, Tosfos says, as far as this dinim, actual kabel tumah, yes, you have to do that mitzvah, kisi adam, but until you did, or any blood that you didn't cover, is still subject to the regular rules of being makshul kabel tumah. Therefore, if the blood had come out, the meat would be makshul kabel tumah, and only because none came out is the Tanakhama saying over here that it's not mukhtar. As far as the fact that, now, usually, of course, you wash meat, as we just said before in the Gemara, you wash the meat before and after the melicha, so wouldn't it become mukshul akabal tumah anyway? So Tosfos says, first of all, we could be talking about that you're roasting the meat, so therefore you're not washing it anyway. Or it could be that you washed it before and after the melicha using made peiros, using fruit juices of various kinds. So it was not mukshul akabal, because those are not among the seven liquids, and therefore it's not mukshul akabal tumah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, on the other hand, Rabbi Shimon says, no, the very fact that you shechted it makes it mukshul akabal tumah. And it is, in other words, Rashi says that what shechita makes the meat mutar to eat, obviously, therefore, so it takes away the issue of Eiv Menachai, therefore, says Rabbi Shimon, it also has the effect of making it into food relative to the dinim of tumah. The whole idea of actual kabel tumah is that food is not considered food unless it got wetted with one of the shiva mashkin after it was detached from its original place. Meaning, for example, let's say with crops, they always become wet while they're growing, obviously, because rain falls on them when you irrigate them. In the case of animals, similar, obviously blood was circulating throughout its body while it was alive. But that's not much actual kabel tumah yet until when it's detached from where it grows. And then it becomes wet with one mishul mashkin, then it's considered food. But here, says Reb Shimon, it's anybody considered food by virtue of the shkita. Therefore, because before it was also as Eiv Menachai, and now it's mutter. Therefore, says Reb Shimon, you don't need a separate thing to make it susceptible to tumah. Just that fact itself, just the shkita itself accomplishes that, even if no blood came in. So the Gemara starts off, time of the Loyotim and Hamdav. Now the implication of the Mishnah is, the only reason, according to the Tanakhama, why the meat is not mukshul akabal tumah, and only because no blood came out. implying that if blood did come out, then you would not be able to eat the meat with tummy hands. Again, maybe you would actually be also to according to Rashi, because then you're making yourself tummy when you eat that meat. According to the Rosh, it's not so much that it's an Easter, but the point is that then in fact you are tummy as a result of eating that meat, and that would mean you can't eat tumor or kodshin. Well, the question is, why am I? Yadayim Shniyas Hein. Aren't a person's hands, midrabanan, considered a shady l'tumah? And a sheni is not able to produce a shlishi when it comes to cholin. We have there's avatoma, the original source of toma, yavaviyavosatoma in the case of a mess, but then you have avatoma, so various times, sheretz, shichvazera, nevela, etc., various cases of people that are tome, all of them are ovisatoma. And then you have, when they touch something, it becomes a rishon, and when that rishon touches something, it becomes a sheni. By cholin, it stops there. There's nothing beyond sheni in cholin. When it comes to truma, then we go to shlishi, and when we go to cotton, when it's chodshin, then we go all the way down to revi. The difference is, the reason why we start counting numbers only from rishon and onward, why we do avatoma, or avi avasatoma, and avatoma as their own separate category, is because avasatoma are able to be metame anything. People, kalim, foods, and drinks. As opposed to what we call vlodis hatoma in general, which includes all the ones that have numbers attached to them, rishon, sheni, etc., those are, generally speaking, only able to be the time of foods and drinks, but not people and not kalim. Well, certain exceptions that are banan, but basically that's the general rule. So now, by chulin, you don't go any further than sheni. And the hands, midrabanan, are also sheni. So what's the problem if you were, so let's say this meat did become mukshal kabel truma by the blood of the shchita. So what? Your hands touching it wouldn't make it a shlishi because it's cholin. So what does the Mishnah mean to distinguish between whether blood came out or not? Well, the Gemara says that omi ma'ide v'cholin askin. How do we know the Mishnah is talking about cholin? Shekotani, because like we said before, the Mishnah says chaya. The Mishnah mentions behema chaya v'oif. De'ilu kodshim chaya v'kodshim mehita. After all, when it comes to kodshim, there's no such thing as a wild animal, korbanos brought from cows, sheep, or goats, or dogs, or turtle doves. So you don't have any chayas, you know, there's no deer, or gazelle, or buffalo that are brought as korbanos, or whatever, giraffe, or whatever, that are brought as korbanos. So there isn't necessarily, therefore the Mishnah has to be talking about cholin. Furthermore, there's a couple of other reasons why we can't say the Mishnah is talking about kodshin. Ibekodshin, kila yafanad dam kfeira. You're telling me that by kodshim, if no blood came out, meat would be kosher to eat? What do you mean? Who asked me? The dam would sorry. The fact is, you need blood to sprinkle on them as there. Without that, the meat of the korban is not going to be mutter to eat. So necessarily, some blood has to come out to be able to put on them as there. And another point, why clearly our Mishnah can't be talking about kodshim, either kodshim, ki yotzenehen dam mi machshir. On the contrary, even with kodshim, even if blood does come out, would it be machshir? How do we know that blood of kodshim is not machshir fully lekabel tuma? Shenema, because the pasuk says, you don't eat blood, ala ardes tishkofenu kamoyim, pour it out on the ground like water, from which we come in, damshu nishbach kamayim, only blood just poured out like water, where you don't have to do anything further with it, machshir, then that's machshir, any food that it falls on to be makabel tumah. She'ein nishpach kamayim, blood that is not poured out like water, because you can't, you have to sprinkle it on the mizbeach. So it's not considered like water, ein machshir, so therefore it's not machshir makabel tumah. Meaning, in other words, v'chlal, how do we know that blood is machshir makabel tumah? From this very pasuk, there's a saying that blood is compared to water, and water, the Torah tells us in Parshas Shmini, is machshir food makabel tumah. Well, if the blood is not has to be sprinkled on the mizbeach, then it's not kamoyim anymore, and therefore that hekesh wouldn't apply to him. So in fact, blood of kodshim is not machshir makabel tumah. Now, this is where Tosfos had pointed out that on the other hand, with Chaya and Oif, you need Kisi Adam, shouldn't that also be considered that if not Tishbachenu Kamoyim? And Tosfos says that no, the fact is, Tishbachenu Kamoyim just means you don't receive it in a kevi. With Korbanos, you receive the kevi in a Kli Shoreis. But the fact that you do have to do Kisi Adam with it, that is true, but that doesn't take away the fact that there is Ala Oret Tishbachenu Kamoyim, and therefore such blood is Mashal Tabal Choma by form. But again, when we're talking about kodshim, then the blood would not, in fact, be matched of a kabel tumah because of this pasuk, because of this limud from the pasuk. So therefore, any matcher, so therefore it's not matched of a kabel tumah. The two, and yet another reason why the Mishnah can't possibly be talking about Kodshim, Iba Kodshim, on the contrary, you could argue that if the Mishnah was talking about Kodshim, Kilo Yachman Damlan Eskashi, you're telling me that even if no blood comes out, they don't become much of a Kabbal Choma, why not? The Skashi, the Chibas HaKodesh, they should become kosh, they should become mukshu the Kabbal Choma because of the concept of Chibas HaKodesh, the preciousness of Kodshim, where you don't even need Hechsher the Kabbal Choma for them to be able to become Tomei. The Kaimalon, Chibas HaKodesh Machshavetan. We know a concept called Chibas HaKodesh makes things mukshu the Kabbal Choma to be considered food, and in fact, it even includes things that are not food. We learned about it in Menachos, for example, that includes, for example, wood and Mavoina, even though those things are completely inedible, nevertheless, they can be Kabbal Tumah by virtue of the Schibas HaKodesh. Rashi over here and in some other places says we learn it from Pasuk, which therefore according to Rashi, it comes out that it's an actual Garaisa Din of Schibas HaKodesh. There are Rishonim who learn that the whole concept of Schibas HaKodesh is only Dirabbanan. In other words, when we're saying that blood of Kodshim can't be Machshav of a Kabbal Choma, we mean other food. If that blood squirts onto some other food, it won't be Machshav, which was not yet wetted, then it won't be Machshav of a Kabbal Choma. But the meat of the Kodshim itself is going to anyway be Machshav of a Kabbal Choma because of Chibas HaKodesh. So for all these reasons, clearly, our Mishnah cannot be talking about Kodshim. So we're back to the question. And if it was talking about Kodshim, then we would understand that we could at least understand, though, that when the Mishnah is saying, you should be aware, that you're allowed to eat it. Tomei hands, because it's not going to be able to become Tomei because it wasn't Mukshav HaKabbal Choma. But based on all these reasons, we said the Mishnah can't possibly be talking about Kodshim, and in fact, it would be Mukshav HaKabbal Choma regardless. The last point was because of Chibas HaKodesh. Necessarily, then the Mishnah is talking about Chulin. Well, we're back to the question. Even if you did touch it with Tomei hands, even if it was Mukshav HaKabbal Choma and you touched it with Tomei hands, your hands are shaney. There's no further than shaney by Cholin, so there's no such thing as shlishi. So what's the problem? Why is the Mishnah implying that the only reason why there's no problem is because it didn't become Mukshav HaKabbal Choma? The Mishnah should be saying there's no problem because your hands are shaney and Cholin can't become Tomei by a shaney. So the Gemara is going to give a few answers. First thing, so Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Barvua, Chocha, the Chol Shalachan, the Chesef, Meiser, Askin. Our Mishnah is not just talking about plain old Cholin. It's talking about meat that you bought. It's talking about meat from an animal that you bought with Meiser Sheni. Now, Meiser Sheni has to be eaten only in Yerushalayim and only with Tahara. So obviously you can't have meat itself being Meiser Sheni to begin with. Meiser Sheni is only for kings, but you can have that it was bought with Meiser Sheni money. In which case, therefore, our Mishnah is necessarily not like Rav Meir. It's not, as we learn in the Mishnah, in Masechta Torah, call up Tol B.S. Mayim, Medivei Sofrim, any case where Midrabbanan, a person has to toivel, so you have the famous Xeras Yudhas Dabra, you have a group of 18 things that the Chacham were goes there, you have a famous story in Masechta Shabbos that at one point Vishama and Vishilo were visiting the attic of Hananiah and Chizkiah and Gorin. We learned in Menachos that he was busy doing research on Sefer Yechezkel to show how various things in it that seemingly contradict the Torah are not in fact contradictions. So at one point they visited him over there, and then Vishama outnumbered Vishilo, and they put through these Xeras Yudhas and many of them have to do, which many of them tell us about cases where the Rabbanon, a person is Tomei, and he has to toivel. One of them is, for example, when he eats Tomei food that we touched on before. We're going to talk about that point, and we're going to talk about that matter of a person becoming Tomei from eating, from a person himself becoming Tomei, eating Tomei food. We're going to talk about that at the bottom of the Sabbath. Keep in mind, again, the Daraisa of Lada Choma, of Rishon, Shemin, etc., is not able to metame a person, but this is an example where Midrabbanan can. Anyway, so any case, says the Mishnah, where a person has to toivel Midrabbanan, so one example, so a person ate Tomei food would be one example, or another example would be this that we're talking about Yadayim, about a person's hands, which Midaraisa, there's no such thing as hands alone becoming Tomei, but Midrabbanan, a person's hands are considered Tomei, either because sometimes he touches things of Tumah without realizing it, or just because he touches covered parts of his body, and therefore his hands get pushed physically dirty, and it's not respectful to touch Tumah and Kodshim like that. In any case, so where a person meets the Toivol, or wash his hands or his body, so such things make Kodshim Tomei, because all those cases would be considered a Sheni, and then it makes Kodshim a Shmishi, and by Kodshim we're saying you go as far as Ravi. So metame means something, when something is a degree of Tumah, where it's able to metame something else. Since by Kodshim, you go as far as Ravi, then therefore, so, 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 uh, the kodshim that are shlishi are called tomei, as opposed to revi, is going to be called posel, because it's posel. You can't eat such kodshim, but it can't be metame anything else. And the Mishnah continues, posel osa truma, and likewise, it makes truma posel to eat. By truma, you only go as far as shlishi. So again, when your hands or your body or whatever made this truma tomei and made it to a shlishi, it's really called only posel in the sense you can't eat that truma. But nevertheless, it can't posel, it can't make other truma posel because you only go as far as shlishi by truma. Anyway, and continues the Mishnah, however, the mayor says that when a person needs to tovel or wash his hands, he would be allowed to eat chulin, and he would be allowed to eat maiser sheni. So chulin itself, as we said, goes only as far as sheni, and even maiser sheni, the mayor is not concerned about that and says that you can eat it as a sheni latroma. Because after all, maiser sheni is chulin, it has special rules, but it's still not truma or kodesh. The maiser, the Chum said, the Chum Oistrin, the Meiser, the Chum asked him to eat Meiser Sheni when he's Tomim, the Rabbanon. So therefore, according to the Chachamim, we see that there's a distinction between Meiser and Cholin. So, Rav Nachman's answer will work only according to the Chachamim. Rav Nachman's answer that our Mishnah is not just talking about plain Cholin, but rather something that has the Kedusha of Meiser Sheni, is only going to work according to the Chachamim. They would say, if you're a Sheni Latruma, you can eat Cholin Gizun Tehet, you won't be Matame then. And therefore, in our Mishnah, it doesn't matter whether blood came out or not, but when it comes to Meiser Sheni, you cannot eat them as a Sheni Latruma, according to the Chachamim. Well, then then our Mishnah will be talking about that. Again, it's not talking about kodshim for the reasons that we said before in the Gemara, but it's not talking about plain chulin, it's talking about maaser sheni. Whereas according to the mayor, it wouldn't matter according to the mayor in our Mishnah, the same way as you could eat chulin with tomei hands, even if the meat was mukshel kabel tumah, the same way you could with maaser sheni as well. So Rav Nachman's answer requires us to say that our Mishnah is not like the mayor. However, Rav Shimon bar Ashi points out a contradiction in that. A logical question against it. Mimai, who says that that's what the Chachamim mean when they say that you say Oisrim the Meiser? What do they mean by that exactly? Dioma Abkan they triggered Abban and Alei the Meir Elab Akivas Meiser. Maybe the Chachamim are only arguing with the Meir about a person. That person who's in this state, having to being tomei midir abana, and having to tovel midir abana, that he can't eat ma'aser sheni. But who says? Maybe they agree that such a person could touch ma'aser sheni and won't make a tomei, because ma'aser sheni again, to that extent, has the dinim of chulin and can't go beyond sheni v'tomei. And after all, our Mishnah is you'd be allowed to touch ma'aser v'achil v'cholin or eating chulin. There would be no argument. So maybe in fact our Mishnah wouldn't work according to the Chacham either if you're gonna explain that it's talking about Maaser Sheni. In fact, Tosfos says the word Vidilma over here means it's not even a Vidilma, maybe so. In fact, if Shini Ba'ashi's argument is definitely so. So you can't say our Mishnah would work according to the Chachamim, because that's not what the Chachamim mean with their opinion. Tosfos also points out there's no reason to mention that the Chum would say you're allowed to eat chulin when you're tomei. Of course, you're allowed to eat chulin when you're tomei, especially based on what the Rosh said before. But no, we're just mentioning it. Tosfos says because there's a relevant Gemara in Chagiga about that mentions touching mice or eating chulin, and therefore the Gemara brings it over here as well. Even though in Or Sylvia, it's not really necessary. In any case, so the Shini Ba'ashi says, no, you can't explain that our Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim, because the Chachamim, in fact, don't hold that you can't, they hold you can't eat Ma'aser Sheni when you're talking. They don't say anything about touching it. And in our Mishnah, we're talking about touching it. Because our Mishnah has the expression, you can eat it with tomei hands. Now, the Mishnah instead could have said, a person whose hands are tamei can eat them. Instead, the Mishnah places that they can be eaten with hands that are tamei. So that would mean ne'echolin implies that somebody else is giving it to him. And therefore, the Mishnah is implying or including also a case where somebody else is feeding it to him without the person himself touching it. fact that the inside of his mouth touches it is neither here nor there. That's called in halacha maga besa starting. It's touching him in a hidden part of his body, namely in his mouth or in his throat. Particularly, let's say somebody sticks it down his throat, and therefore the fact that his body is tame is not metapani. Well then, so in other words, our Mishnah is not, so our Mishnah is talking about where he's eating it without touching it, and maybe in fact the Chachamim are only saying, that the Chachamim are saying, that such a person is able to, the Chachamim would say that such a person is also to eat Ma'asu Sheni, when his body is tame and he has to toivo midrabanan, but not that he can't touch it, whereas our Mishnah would be talking about, that our Mishnah could be talking about either one, whether he's touching it or not, and the Mishnah is saying he's allowed to. So therefore, you can't say that it's talking Ma'aseh Sheni, because we're back to the point. As far as Tumah V'Tahara, Ma'aseh Sheni has the same dinim as regular Fulin, and it can only go as far as Sheni V'Tumah, and we're back to the question that in our Mishnah, his hands are Sheni V'Tumah, and therefore, what's the problem with him touching the meat, even if it was Mukshu L'Kabal Tumah? So that answer doesn't... okay. And in fact, Tosfos teaches out. We could say the Chachamim would say, don't eat it, even if your hands are tummy, don't eat it, even if somebody else is going to be putting it down your throat, because the Chachamim don't want you to eat it, even though you'd be perfectly allowed to touch it. But nevertheless, though, our Mishnah is implying that the only reason we're allowed to eat it is because it didn't become Mukshu L'Kabal Tumah. But why? According to what we just said, it should be mutter anyway because Ma'aseh Sheni doesn't go beyond Sheni the Tumah. So rather, Rapapa says a different explanation of Amishna. What we're talking about is a case where a person's hand, normally we're saying a person's hands are trauma, they're shaking in the trauma. But here we can have that the person's hands are actually a rishon l'truma. Tchila and rishon are synonyms, and therefore the Gemara sometimes uses the word tchila as a synonym for rishon. So here we're talking about where his hands are actually a rishon l'truma. Well, a rishon l'truma touches something and makes it a sheni l'truma. Chulin can go as far as training the truma. Therefore, that would be the point of the Mishnah, therefore, that in this case, the meat is not mukshu l'kabal truma, and therefore your rishon hands, which tchila hands, do not make it tame, whereas had it been mukshu l'kabal truma, had blood come out, then you touching it would make it a sheni, and Chulin is able to be ashamed. So the Papa says that's what our Mishnah is talking about. The Reb Shimon Elazar, he named me, therefore our Mishnah goes according to Reb Shimon Elazar. The Tanya, we learn in Braisa, Ein Yadayim Tefilas L'Chulin, a person's hands are not considered Tefilas, are not considered a Rishon as far as Chulin. In other words, it actually explains there are some cases where it is true that we talk about some cases where a person's hands become tame. Aside from the various cases that I've gone on, but for example, let's say you have a person stuck his hands into a bais hamenuga, not he says, a person, there's a house that's been locked up because it has saras, and now you have to wait 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, depending on circumstances, to see what happens with it, whether the house is going to be demolished, whether it can be made tahor, etc., etc. Now, if a person sticks his hands inside such a house, then a house is an avatoma, and his hands become a rishon l'truma. However, the Braisa says, even then, his hands will not be considered rishon relative to chulin. Relative to chulin, they will be considered sheni. So in other words, this person who stuck his hands into this bais haminoga, if he touches chulin, nothing happens, because his hands are only considered a sheni relative to chulin. Relative to truma and kodshim, we consider them a rishon. So if he touches truma, he will make it a sheni, and then that sheni is able to touch the other food, and then if that sheni touches other food, it makes it a shlishi, etc. And the same thing, as a shlishi, and by kodshim also down to the feet. So, according to the Tanakhama, when it comes to Cholin, though, the hands will never be considered Rishon L'Trumah. Anytime you talk about a person's hand as Tameh, always means Sheni L'Trumah relative to Cholin. Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, Reb Shimon Meir, but Reb Shimon Elazar says in the name of Reb Meir, it's not so. Yadayim Tchilas L'Cholin or Shnias L'Trumah. The hands will, in fact, be considered Tchilas Rishon as far as Cholin and Shnias L'Trumah. What does that mean? What does that mean? How are they going to be stronger Trumah for Cholin or for Trumah? So they might ask Tchilas L'Cholin aim L'Trumah Loi. What does it mean? Only a rishon as far as truma, as far as chulin, not as far as truma. That's backwards. And the answer is Tochi Kama. What he means is Tchilas Achra Chulin. He means that their Tchilas also as far as Chulin, and of course, for Tchumah. So in other words, this fellow who put his hand, he's the Bayis HaManuga, Rav Shimon Elazar, is going to tell us that no, you Tanakama are saying if he touches Chulin, he's not Matame then, because his hands are Shnius as far as that. No, says Rav Shimon Elazar, his hands will be considered a Rishon for all purposes, even Chulin, and if he touches them, he makes it a shame. But then continues Rav Shimon Elazar, Shnius, but if his hands are Shnius, the various other cases where his hands will be Shnius, just plain unwashed hands, Yadayim Sam Yadayim, where he doesn't know whether they're Tomei or not, or various other cases where Dirabbanan, his hands become Tomei and become a Sheni or Truma, then says Rav Shimon Elazar, but Truma Ein, Lachulin Loi, then they're only going to cause a problem as far as Truma, because they'll make it a Shlishi, but not as far as Chulin, because Chulin, things stop at Shem. So therefore, says Rav Papa, our Mishnah, which again, the implication of our Mishnah is the only reason why the meat is not able to become tamei is because there was no blood came out of the animal, and therefore it was never mukhsha l'kabel tumah. Therefore, you can touch it and eat it with hands that are tamei. So Rav Papa is saying that our Mishnah then would go like with now that and the implication is that if blood did come out, it would be mukhsha l'kabel tumah. Again, the question was if your hands are shiny and the meat is cool, then what's the problem? And the answer is because of the fact we're talking about where his hands are a rishon l'tumah. And if Shimon Elazar holds that there is such a thing as hands being a rishon l'tumah, even relative to cholin. So the Gemara asks me, how do you actually find such a case where hands are tchilas? So okay, we have, you could say kind of as Rashi gave us a spoiler sort of by telling us about this case where a person put his hands into a house that was locked up for tzaras. But the Gemara has not known, the Gemara doesn't know that yet. So now the Gemara is going to answer, yes, Litania, as we learn in a Braisa, it's actually a Mishnah in the Sefer Yadayin, so it should be the same Yitznan. So now, like this, if a person actually goes into the Bayis HaManuga, then he becomes Tomei. That's a Tumah Min HaTorah. And in fact, actually, if he stays there more than a couple of minutes, if he stays there more than Tadeach El Esfras, then not only he becomes Tomei, but also all the clothing he wears becomes Tomei. But that's when he goes in completely into the house. But the Mishnah says, Tichnis Yodah Bayis HaManuga, if he only sticks in his hands into this Bayis HaManuga, so midatoda, nothing would happen. But midirabanan, yodav tchilas, divir Rabakiva. Rabakiva says his hands will become a rishon l'tumah. B'chom ramim, yodav shnius. But from saying that his hands are going to be only shnius. So Rashi adds the point. Even if he had previously washed his hands, so like this, his hands are shenu l'tumah anyhow. If he washes his hands, then he takes away that tumah. That's the whole idea, again, of washing for bread, which we're going to learn about in detail later in Armasek. But now, even if he washed his hands, and he didn't touch anything that's tumah, now he put them into the spice of a nuga, then they go right back to being a shame in the tumah. So the Gemara continues. Now, what's the underlying machlokes? The kulam abia b'mitzvah lo shmabia. Now, we would say that if everybody would agree, Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, that if a person partially goes into a place, it's not considered that he actually went in there. So therefore, he's stuck in his hands, but not most of his body, midarais, and nothing would happen. The Hacha, only midirabbanan, is he, only midirabbanan is he tum. Oh, so there's only a tumah here, midirabbanan. The only reason to say that his hands are tamei is because we make a gzera. If he puts in his hands, then he might mistakenly think that the same thing applies to putting in his whole body. Because in other words, that would be tamei min hatorah. So now the machlokes was wrong with me. So Rabbi Akiva is saying that he's going to say that what the chum did when they made that gzera, they made his hands are going to be equal to his body. If his entire body goes in, he becomes a rishon l'tumah. Therefore, if he sticks in his hands, then also rishon l'tumah. Or ma'os tafer, the chum hold yadayim, ki yadayim da'alma shavin rabbanon, the chum would hold, when the chum imposed this zera, they're going to say the din of these hands is going to be exactly the same as a regular case where the chum declare a person's hands tafer. Namely, that they're going to be a shenu l'tumah. Because every case we're saying where the chum said that a person's hands are tumah, then they become a shenu, whether sam yadayim, or whether other examples like that, then they become a shenu l'tumah. So the question is just to what did the Chachamim want to analogize the hands? So the whole body according to Rabbi Akiva, therefore Rishon, or to other cases of hands according to the Chachamim, therefore Shani. Tosfos points out when it comes to the Bis Mikdash, it is true that going in partially, in where the Talmid posting sticks his hand, for example, into the Azara, then the Gemara tells us in Zvachim he does get malchus. Because then the Gemara learns it from Sukkim over there that even part of his body going in is enough to be an Isur. But when it comes to other cases, if you hear a talking about going into a Bais HaManuga, then we're saying that, then we're saying no, he wouldn't become Tomei on a Daraisa level, and it's only a Tumah D'Rabbanan. This point, by the way, that Bia B'Mikdash, so the Bais HaMikdash, is an issue. There's a whole discussion about the Kosel. It's generally accepted that the Kosel is the rule of the Harabais. But there is an opinion that the Radvaz brings in one of his Trubas that it's actually the rule of the Azara. If it was the rule of the Azara, we actually wouldn't be able to approach it at all nowadays because all Tommy Mess. I mean, also to approach the rule of the Azara, but the consensus is that it's the rule of the Harabais. Nevertheless, though, there is a point that some posts can argue, maybe based on this, then you shouldn't be sticking your fingers between the stones of the Kosel, because then that would be Gia B'Mikdash. We're Tomei, and you're sticking your fingers in, and therefore, in that sense, culturally going into the Harabais. However, it seems that most Poskim are not worried about that either for various reasons, and one of them being that after all, you could argue that the Kedusha of the Harabais begins only on the other side of the wall, not in the thickness of the wall, and therefore there's no problem. Most of us, anyway, are Tomei. We're all Tomei Nest. Most of us are not Tomei with other Trumas, anyhow. And a Tomei Nest technically is allowed to go into the Harabais anyway. The fact that we don't nowadays go into the Harabais is basically because we don't know what parts we're allowed and not allowed into. In principle, if everything was marked off, we would be able to go into parts of the present day Harabais. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, the vote would be, so there is such a thing, according to the Bakeva, as hands being a Rishon L'Trumah. So now, within that, in the earlier Brisa, the Papa Ador, you have Machloikas, when a person's hands are Rishon L'Trumah, are they a Rishon for all purposes? Yes, according to the Shimon HaLazar. And no, according to the Chachamim, according to them, his hands are considered only Sheni relative to Fulin, and they're considered Rishon relative to Truma and Kanchi. So therefore, says Rav Papa on Mishnah, again, which was implied with on Mishnah, where the implication is that if blood comes out, the meat is much of the Kamal Tumah, then if you touch it with Tomei hands, you're going to make a Tomei. That would be a coincidence of Shimon HaLazar, who says that your hands are Rishon L'Trumah. So the Gemara asks, so why does he have to say Dafka like Rav Shimon HaLazar? Better let him say that the Mishnah is like Rav Akiva. Which we would refer to, because after all, most Stam Mishnayos usually follow Rabbi Meir, who in turn was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Famous Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about Stam Mishnah, Stam Sefer, Stam Sifra, Stam Sifri, etc. And each of them is attributed to a different Tana, but all of them were Talmudim of Rabbi Akiva. So more often than not, the Mishnah as we have it, and also the Sifra and the Sifri and the Sefer, more often than not, they represent the opinion of Rabbi Akiva as expressed by his various Talmudim. So why do we have to say that our Mishnah is Dafka according to Rabbi Shimon HaLazar? Better say that it's Rabbi Akiva. Dama Yod of Tchilas Havyan, where we just saw that Rabbi Akiva clearly says that his hands are Tchilas or Rishon. And the answer is because it's not a proof. Because Rabbi Akiva's point that his hands are tefillahs may indeed be only as far as Truma and Kodshin, which are more stringent, which would be like the Chachamim, again, in other words, the Chachamim against Rabbi Shimon HaLazar in the earlier Braisa would be following that understanding of Rabbi Akiva. But you could say maybe Rabbi Akiva himself holds that as far as Chulin, his hands are only Shnias, namely like the Chachamim against Rabbi Shimon HaLazar. Therefore, a Papa can't say on Mishnah goes like Rabbi Akiva, because there's two ways of understanding Rabbi Shimon's opinion, of understanding Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Therefore, necessarily, he has to say it's like Rabbi Shimon HaLazar, because Rabbi Shimon HaLazar clearly says that even as far as Chulin, his hands are considered Rishon. Well, the Gemara asks, the Lahevim Nami Shneis. Fine, even if you're going to say that the hands are Shneis, you still don't need to, you can still make our Mishnah work according to Rabbi Akiva. Because we do find that Rabbi Akiva himself disagrees with the premise that we were saying so far. All this time we've been saying that by Chulin it never goes any further than a Shein. But Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that and says by Chulin there is such a thing as Shlishi. Well then, our Mishnah could be talking about his hands are Shneis, and it would follow Rabbi Akiva's opinion. As far as that detail, the fact that Shneis can make, the fact that a Sheni can be Matame, something to make it a Shlishi, even by Chulin. Well, very well then, our Mishnah would flow very nicely. If no blood came out and the meat is not mukshala kabel trauma, then it doesn't become trauma and you touch it with shiny hands and nothing happens. But if it was mukshala kabel trauma and you touch it with regular shiny hands, then it's going to become a shlishi, because according to Rabbi Akiva, that works by cholin as well. Again, now that once we establish that our Mishnah is clearly talking about cholin. It's not. We learn in a Mishnah in Sota. Boi bayoim. On that day, the famous day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed as Nasi, Darash Rabbi Akiva, then Rabbi Akiva gave the following Darash. You have many places in Shas where you have things that are attributed to Boi Bayoim, and then the Gemara explains all of them who said in the Bais Medrash on that day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed Nasi. The Gemara tells us in Brachas, when it has the whole story, it mentions that they opened up the Bais Medrash and hundreds and more Talmidim came that hadn't joined before. From other places, it comes out that also all the top level Chachamim were able to attend, and therefore they were able to clarify many points in Halacha and in Agadza too that had not been clarified up to that point. So whenever it says Boi Boi, it means that day. There was a Isaac Halevi in a Sefer Dodos HaRishonim explains on various grounds that Boi Boi doesn't literally mean that all those things happen on one day. Boi Boi basically means during that period. He explains that it was a period of approximately 2 years after the Elazar ben Azariah was appointed, when they had this ongoing thing where there are many people, many more people than before, coming to the Beis Medrash, and the Chacham are engaging in high-level discussions, etc., and they were able to do that until he says the Romans got wind of it and forced them to leave. In any case, the point is, about Kibbutz Dashin, the pasuk says the whole kli cheres will go to Yitmar. The pasuk said that if a kli cheres, if a cheres falls into a kli cheres, and we learned at the end of the previous parent that kli cheres specifically are able to become tamei only from their inside, not their outside. And the pasuk tells us that cheres falls into them, and we talk about that even if it falls just into its airspace, if it's like suspended on a swing or something, the pasuk says Yitmar, it will become tamei. And that Akiva points out in the Mishnah and Sota, Tomei Lo Nemar. Now, so the Pasuk says that any food that is in it, Yitma, will become Tomei. Tomei Lo Nemar, it doesn't say that food is just Tomei, and the Yitma, it will become Tomei, which means Matamei Acherim, which means that it has the capability of being Matamei others. In other words, we read the word Yitma as though it said Yitame. It's able to make something else Tomei. Limit our kicker, Shane, who owes the Shlishi. From that we learn that a loaf of bread or any other kind of food that's in the oven, we mentioned a loaf of bread, because you typically bake it in an oven. So a loaf of bread, which is a sheni of a tumor, shu ois a shlishi b'cholin, that it is able to make something else that it touches a shlishi even by cholin. In other words, Rabbi Akiva's logic is as follows. The sheretz itself is an avatumah. When it falls into the oven, it makes the oven enrishim a tumor. The oven touches the bread, which is stuck to its wall, therefore the bread becomes a sheni of the tumor. And the pasuk says about that bread, yitma, which Rabbi Akiva is reading as if it said yitama, that it's a yitame, that it's able to metame other food, and the result is that it means that, and we're talking about chulin over here, we're not talking about tumor or kodshim, so therefore it means that even by chulin, sheni is able to make something else a shlishi. Well then, why does your papa have to say that our mission is like Reb Shimon Elazar and say we're talking about his hands are rishon, and because Reb Shimon Elazar clearly says that applies to cholin, why does he say the hands are sheni? But Rabbi Akiva holds that sheni is able that even by cholin, a sheni can make something a shlishi. Well, very well then, our mission would go like Rabbi Akiva, and again we would rather do that because the Sam Mishnah is usually a kun to Rabbi Akiva. And the answer is that wouldn't work because Dumahani needed the Tumah Daraisa, because maybe Rabbi Akiva would say that when it comes to a Tumah Daraisa, a Sheretz is a classic Tumah Daraisa, so then you can say that you go as far as Shlishi by falling. But Dirabonamloy, but not necessarily when it comes to a Tumah whose very source is Dirabonam. Namely, we're talking about over here the Tumah of hands, where the whole Tumah is only Midirabonam. So therefore Rabbi Akiva would agree that in that case you don't go any further than Shani, and therefore we can't say that our Mishnah would go like Rabbi Akiva, and we're talking about his hands being a Shani, creating a Shlishi, because that wouldn't work. According to Rabbi Akiva, there would in fact be that distinction between Tumah Daraisa and Tumah Darabana. Tosfos points out that there is really the Gemara in Sota when it discusses Rabbi Akiva's opinion. And the Gemara says over there that Rav Asi brings over there that in fact there's no distinction, according to Rabbi Akiva, between Truma and Cholin. So apparently Rav Asi would disagree with the conclusion of the Gemara over here. But at least Rav Papa is taking Rav Akiva's opinion to be that only by Truma D'Oraisa would there be such a concept of being able to go as far as Shlishi by Cholin, but if the Truma itself stems only from something D'Rabbanan, then not. And therefore, says Rav Papa, following that understanding of Rav Akiva, can't say that our Mishnah is according to Rav Akiva. Necessarily, therefore, he would have to say that our Mishnah is like Reb Shimon Elazar, and that we're talking about his hands are not a shame of the Tumah, but rather Reb Yishon, where again, Reb Shimon Elazar is the only Tana who clearly states that even by Cholin, there is such a thing as hands being a Rishon with Tumah, and therefore they would make the meat shaney, were it not for the fact, as our Mishnah said, that no blood came out during the Shvita, and therefore it wasn't Mukhshul Kabbal Tumah. So that's a way, says Reb Papa, of understanding our Mishnah, and still fitting with the known halachas and the known opinions that we have. So we'll continue tomorrow, Rav Hashem. We're going to continue with another explanation of what our mission is talking about and what the scenario is.